We start in Carrboro, where the owners of the coffee shop Present Day on Main have temporarily shut their doors following a racially charged incident this past weekend. Owners Sophie Superman and Soteria Shepperson say they were hosting a private event when a woman showed up uninvited to distribute campaign literature and refused to leave. They say the woman, who is white, got belligerent and assaulted a black woman at the event, then called police, and they say the police were more sympathetic to the white trespasser than the black owners and attendees, one of whom had been assaulted. No public statement on this yet from the police department, but speaking Tuesday at the Carrboro Town Council meeting, Shepperson said Present Day on Main is now working to update its safety protocols, and she had harsh words about the police response.
I cannot continue to tell black and brown people that they will come here and be safe when I call the police, and he spends more time on his phone talking to her than he does me. When we let him know that there was a guest, a black woman assaulted by a white woman, he says to her she has to go to Hillsborough Courthouse to file a charge, which she did, only to find about four sentences in the police report. And because I cannot, in my right mind, sleep at night knowing that if somebody is assaulted on my property and I call the police here and tell them what happened when we have multiple witnesses, they will still take the side of a white woman. I can no longer allow the public to come on this property. What does that mean, Soteria? Effective immediately, Present Day on Main is going to be shut the fuck down until we can come to a resolution that is going to protect black and brown people, including myself. There is no way I would have walked and got in my Audi and left had I assaulted a white woman, whether it was on my property or not.
That's Soteria Shepperson speaking there. We're going to have much more on this as we receive updates, and we have reached out to Carrboro Police as well. Now to UNC, where some faculty members are upset over a new development in the controversy surrounding Nicole Hannah-Jones. During her tenure debate last year, details were made public of a donor agreement between the university and Walter Hussman, the big donor who put some pressure on the Board of Trustees to deny Hannah-Jones' tenure. UNC's investigation of the leak led officials to search through several faculty members' email accounts without their knowledge or consent. That move drew heavy criticism when it became public knowledge, even landing UNC on a national list of the 10 worst colleges in America for free speech. That all has been reported before. Now, NC Policy Watch reports new documents show UNC went even further than that, also searching some professors' computer backup systems as well. Those documents have been redacted, but the number of professors impacted could be nearly two dozen. Turning to other news, the Estes Drive connectivity project entered a new phase this week. Estes Drive is down to one way only just east of MLK Boulevard to allow crews to install sidewalks and bike lanes along the busy road. Pedestrian and bicycle safety are hot topics in our community, but driver safety is also a big topic statewide. More people died in traffic accidents last year than any other year in the last two decades. And as Carolina Connection's Lily Clark reports, that's got a lot to do with distracted driving.
Okay, perhaps I should get buckled.
I'm with Bennett David in his chunky beige SUV, probably the homiest car I've ever been in. He literally has incense burning. Red beads and a Snoopy figurine hang from the rearview mirror.
We're going for a drive.
David is a senior at Duke. Also, his phone is dead. He's just plugged it in.
So I'd actually be, like, ordering food on it if it weren't dead.
A couple apps have a particularly strong pull while he's driving.
The big justifiable one is GPS. The big not justifiable one is Spotify. And occasionally, I've ordered food while driving.
He said his little brother yells at him for it.
Part of that's because he wants to control the music, but most of it's concern for my safety and well-being.
PSAs, scare tactics, these don't do a lot to change people's behavior. Neither do new laws. That's according to Arthur Goodwin, researcher at UNC Highway Safety Research Center. Goodwin said North Carolina's 2007 ban on cell phone use for teenage drivers had basically no effect. Some people ignore the law. It's also just difficult to enforce.
Police officers will be the first to tell you it's hard for them to see a driver is using a cell phone or to tell what they're doing with the phone.
In North Carolina, texting while driving is illegal, but other things, like dialing a number, aren't. Even hands-free voice controls can be distracting. So can the smartphone-like touchscreens installed in many new cars. Driving culture isn't static. Goodwin said in the 1970s,
people more or less just look the other way at drunk drivers.
But then it became socially unacceptable. During the 2010s, he saw some hope that the same thing could happen with cell phones.
That it would just become, you know, we as a society don't accept this behavior. I don't think we've really moved in that direction.
There's a disconnect. People in surveys will say they know using their cell phones while driving is dangerous, but they'll also admit to the behavior. Tasha Harrison Springs tries to get people to stop driving distracted. She lives in Winston-Salem, and she's getting her bachelor's in psychology. Her method is pretty involved. It includes deleting most apps from your phone for 5 days and meditating daily for another 21. But it makes sense because Harrison Springs had a brush with death, turned her life around, and now getting people off their phones is her whole thing. It was 2012, a warm October evening. Harrison Springs was driving with her window down when her daughter texted.
Mom, pay my bill. My cell phone's gonna get turned off. Pay my bill, pay my bill. And I was like, I'll pay your bill when I get ready. And that's what I kept texting her. And when I looked up, I was connected to the overpass. I see the sparks popping in the air.
Harrison Springs hit another car and flipped. She also didn't have her seatbelt on. She woke up about to take a helicopter to the trauma center in Chapel Hill. Doctors had to reconstruct her face. She remembers her first night awake after the accident in the ICU.
That whole night was torture for me because I was like, what if I kill somebody and they're not telling me yet?
She didn't kill anyone. The two people she'd hit suffered only minor injuries.
As much as we love these devices, it's just like Russian roulette. When you pushing them buttons, it's like, that's the trigger. When is the bullet going to come out? You don't know.
When she started driving again, despite the traumatic accident, it was still hard to avoid using her phone.
It's like now I had to train myself. Like if I have an urge to want to touch my phone, in my head now, it's like, okay, pull over.
Goodwin says this is so hard because it's not a decision you make more or less once per drive, like whether to rideshare when you're drunk or whether to put on your seatbelt. If you're in the car for an hour and just use your phone for 1 minute, that's still dangerous. Back in the car with David, I want to see how long it takes to add a song to the Spotify queue. So we pull over.
None of my playlists are loading, so at this point, I'm just going to play a whole album. I love albums because then I just click on it and I'm done.
There have always been ways to be distracted while driving. It's not new, but things like cell phone addictions, notifications, constant pressure to be online, these are.
I guess a fair question is what the hell is so important that I'm like putting my life at greater risk? And I don't really know. I'm afraid it is probably a product of just feeling like I need to rush all the time and also feeling like I'm always late, chronic procrastinator.
When cars and phones compete for our attention, it might be slowing the pace of our lives that helps more than anything. In Durham, I'm Lily Clark.
For Carolina Connection, a student-produced radio newscast from the UNC Hussman School of Journalism and Media that airs on Saturday mornings at 8:30 right here on 97.9 The Hill. Turning to state-level news, COVID-19 hospitalizations continue to drop in North Carolina. Just 274 patients admitted last week across the entire state, though the latest COVID dashboard does show a slight uptick in new cases last week, as well as COVID particles found in wastewater. Those numbers are still lower than they've been since last July. Meanwhile, in the courts, the State Court of Appeals has temporarily blocked a lower court ruling allowing people convicted of felonies to register to vote while serving probation or parole. Yesterday's order puts a hold on that ruling until the appeals process is resolved. Advocates are asking the state Supreme Court to take over the case for an expedited ruling ahead of the May primary. If they turn that down, it goes to the State Court of Appeals instead. Back locally, the Chapel Hill-Carrboro City School Board meets tonight at 6 at the Southern Human Services Center. Board members will hold a work session on the budget and discuss the future of the district's school resource officer program. Also today in local government, the Durham City Council is holding a work session at 1 to consider a legislative agenda for the General Assembly and to choose applicants to interview for an open seat on the board. And in Chatham County, the Pittsboro Board of Commissioners is holding its annual budget retreat this morning, starting at 8:45. Finally, in Durham, big congratulations to Frank Dumas, a student at Bethesda Elementary School. WRAL reports he's headed to the Scripps National Spelling Bee in Washington, D.C. in June. Time now for sports, brought to you this hour by CIMG Residential Mortgage. Carolina basketball team just wrapped up an incredible season, culminating with a run to the NCAA title game. The town of Chapel Hill issued a proclamation recognizing today, April 7th, as a day of recognition for the team. And the honors are still rolling in for head coach Hubert Davis as well. Yesterday, the National Sports Media Association named him their National Division I Coach of the Year. But now that the season is over, our thoughts are already beginning to turn to next year. What does the future hold for UNC, and which Tar Heels are coming back? David Glenn is the longtime host of the David Glenn Show and is now the author of the Holding Court column on our website, chapelburger.com. Here's what he had to say about that question earlier this week.
Nowadays, it's almost impossible to forecast next season in early April. There are more transfers than ever, incoming and outgoing. We wouldn't have even known Brady Manek was going to be a Tar Heel, if I remember correctly, at this time a year ago. What does Armando Bacot decide? What does Caleb Love decide about a possible jump to the NBA? How many scholarships does Hubert Davis have open, depending on which players may choose to transfer out because they're not getting the playing time that they desire? I mean, we know Brady Manek is leaving. We know a guy like RJ Davis is back. But what's Dawson Garcia going to do after his return home for his family's health problems? What about Anthony Harris, who had to leave the time mid-season? I would assume guys like Puff Johnson and others who helped this weekend will be back, but it's hard to make assumptions at this time of year. We also do know that Hubert has signed a four-man recruiting class, including one player who enrolled in January, and a point guard named Seth Trimble from Wisconsin is a really promising prospect. Jalen Washington from Indiana is another top 50 four-star type guy. He's a big guy. So it's going to be a mixture of some freshmen playing, RJ Davis as I think the returning heart and soul of this team. He's just a bulldog of a fantastic guard who was a huge part of the Heels' success. And you know the deal. I mean, even somebody like Leaky Black, because of the weird COVID rules, theoretically could have a super senior year if he wanted to. That's a lot of question marks, right? I mean, imagine the difference between a Carolina team that had RJ and Caleb and Leaky and Bacot versus one where Leaky moves on with his life and career, Bacot and Love turn pro, some of those others don't return. I mean, those are two incredibly different pictures. And here in early April, we just don't know which one we're going to get, or probably some shade of gray in between those two extremes.
That's David Glenn there. Following Carolina's run to the title game, UNC checked in at number 2 in the nation in the final coaches poll of the year. The UNC women's tennis team is doing them even one better. Carolina held at number 1 again this week after edging second-ranked NC State in a meet over the weekend. One more fact about UNC's NCAA tournament run. Monday's final drew about 18 million viewers on TBS, making it the third most watched college basketball game ever on cable TV. The Carolina Duke semifinal was number 2 with 18.5 million viewers. The only game ever to draw more on cable TV was the 2015 national semifinal between Wisconsin and Kentucky. Elsewhere in sports, the Masters get underway today in Augusta, Georgia. One UNC golfer will be there competing. Junior Austin Greaser got a bid to play by virtue of making the finals of the U.S. Amateur last year. He'll tee off this morning at 8:11. Along with former Masters champion Mike Weir and three-time major winner Patrick Harrington. On the diamond, a pair of losses yesterday for UNC. The baseball team lost 15-2 to South Carolina, and the softball team lost 6-2 to UNC Charlotte. It was a better day for the Durham Bulls. They got their first win of the season, 9-4 at Nashville. Game 3 of that series is tonight at 7:30. And in hockey, the Carolina Hurricanes are also in action at 7:30 tonight. They're hosting the Buffalo Sabres.